that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. God of Carnage. That's the name of the Tony-winning dark comedy, which is now on stage at Reading's Old City Hall, produced by Axiom Repertory Theater. Today we hear from the director and the cast. Through Tuesday, at Chico State's Turner Print Museum and the University Art Gallery, the 11th Annual National Print Competition and Exhibition. It displays fine art prints, both highly accomplished and intriguingly innovative, gathered from across the nation. We'll be talking with the two curators who are overseeing the event. That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Maul with the North State Arts Calendar.
Tomorrow, the Orland Art Center ends its exhibit, A Tapestry of Many Textures, featuring the paintings of Rosa Fabrillo Moore. Catch this exhibit on its final day, tomorrow, between 1 and 6. The Blue Room Theater in Chico continues its latest production, Human Error. What happens when a liberal couple discovers that their frozen embryo has been mistakenly implanted into a woman who's conservative? Find out tonight or tomorrow, starting at 7:30. Chico's Inspire School of Arts and Sciences presents the musical Into the Woods, a mashup of several famous fairy tales. Find out what happens after Happily Ever After. See the show tonight or tomorrow, starting at 7 o'clock at the Chico Center for the Arts, on the edge of the Pleasant Valley High campus. At the university's Wismer Theater, Really, Really, a contemporary, quick-witted comic tragedy. This gripping play opens Tuesday evening and only runs 6 days. Tonight, at the Roland Taylor Recital Hall at Chico State, The Trombone Is, a low brass ensemble concert. The low brass choir joins with French horns, euphoniums, and tubas in a thundering of brass instruments, starting at 7:30. Then tomorrow at the university's Laxon Auditorium, the North State Symphony, under the baton of Maestro Scott Seaton, leaps into spring, performing the Snow Maiden Suite by Rimsky-Korsakov, Schumann's Symphony No. 1, Spring, and other pieces. The concert celebrates sunny weather, starting at 7:30. Sunday, the symphony moves to the Cascade Theater in Reading with the same program, starting at 2. In Chico on Sunday, at Chico State's Harlan Adams Theater, Poet Laureate Robert Pinsky and Grammy-winning jazz pianist Lawrence Hobgood blend poetry and jazz. The performance, called Poem Jazz, starts at 7:30. Tuesday night, at Sierra Nevada's Big Room, Roy Rogers and the Delta Rhythm Kings take the stage. They blaze a musical trail from Delta blues to modern rock and roll, starting at 7:30. At 1078 Gallery in Chico, tomorrow is your final chance to see the exhibit The Monday Funnies, showcasing the painted collages of Michael Mulcahy. 1078's hours tomorrow, 12:30 to 5:30. In Oroville, the opening of A Doll's House at the Birdcage Theater has been postponed until March 10th. Tonight, the Norton Buffalo Hall in Paradise welcomes Simon Linge. This Danish singer-songwriter starts his performance at 7 o'clock. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. Born on today's date in 1836, American painter Winslow Homer. Talent, Homer decreed, there's no such thing as talent. What they call talent is nothing but the capacity for doing continuous hard work in the right way.
God of Carnage, the Tony-winning dark comedy, is being produced by Axiom Repertory Theater at Reading's Old City Hall, playing through this weekend only. In the play's backstory, one grade school boy has hit another. And now, the parents of both boys are meeting to discuss the incident. Their meeting starts politely, but escalates into a verbal and physical melee. Our Reading correspondent Kelly Frost got to attend the play. Let's go join him now as he talks with the director and cast.
And tell me your name.
Russell Pyatt, and I'm the director of God of Carnage.
And I understand you're the first person besides Ken Hill who's directed a play for the Axiom Repertory Theater.
Yeah, I met Ken a few years ago and told him I loved directing, and I was able to get a chance to do the show I've wanted to do for 7 years now.
I love the show. It's hilarious. The way the characters interact with each other, it seemed like the alliance has kind of switched back and forth. You just didn't know what was coming next.
Yeah, well, exactly. And as we were going through rehearsal, we set up certain couples, like Annette and Veronica are fighting. So they're over here. The guys are on the other side. And then when the guys are fighting, they're over there. The girls fight, the guys fight, and the couples are fighting. It's a very involved show. And it's one of those shows where you want to come back and you're going to see something different every night.
How did you kind of put through your head how you envisioned how this would go?
I envisioned the set first. That was my first idea. And then I was starting to look for characters, you know, certain actors who could play certain characters. Veronica and Michael, I actually precast them in the show because, one, they've been doing improv for 15 years together. I knew they would just do so well in this show together. But my vision, what you saw tonight, is completely different than what we started off with. The show progresses as you go through rehearsals because everybody's making discoveries. This character will make a discovery of these certain lines that it's like, oh, that's right. It should be said that way. And I'll tell you, there was some stuff tonight that I had never seen before. So every show is different. And that's why we do live theater, because every show is different. And you can see, you know, the more laughter we're going to get, the longer the show's going to run because they have to pause for all that. The vomit scene itself, that was originally just a quick 2 or 3 minutes. Well, when we came here and we're rehearsing on this tile floor, everything spread out. So I had to have them improvise cleaning this thing up because it's got to get cleaned up before anybody else can come back. So it turns into a big old 10-minute bit with these two.
Well, tell me your name and then your character's name.
My name is Travis Michel, and I play Alan Raleigh. He's a lawyer. He's the father of the son that did the hitting.
All four of you were just, I love the way the interaction was. At the beginning, how everybody was trying to be so polite, and then things just kind of progress. Tell me how you feel about playing the character that you did.
He was a fun guy to learn because a lot of his humor is meant to be done straight-faced. No, not so much Lotsy as these guys get to do. And then talking on a phone is also challenging because there's no one on the other end, but I have to add words in there for them to say.
You know, even when the focus was on some of these other three characters, I just loved the expressions that were on your face during the show. I mean, I kept looking, look at this guy over here. It's hilarious.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's another thing to learn, too, is in shows with small casts like this, even in bigger shows, in those instances, what would my character be doing is what I'm thinking. He would act this way, he would react this way, he would make this face, or he'd get on his phone or look at his newspaper. Once you develop a character and understand those ideas, stuff like that comes naturally in a way. Like, I don't even think about it. It just comes naturally.
Tell me your name and the character you play.
My name is Sean Sampson. I play Michael Novak.
You had to look at the program?
No, but I thought it was funny.
I did too. I thought your character was great, and the progression, and then when you finally decided you had enough and took your sweater off and then said, this is who I am, that's fantastic.
I was curious when we were rehearsing how that progression was going to happen, so I'm glad it read well.
I almost thought you were going to take that off and have a Donald Trump shirt on, though, but the shirt that you had was pretty good, too.
Well, I actually was voting for a NASCAR, but my wife wouldn't approve it, so...
The character is probably nothing like what you really are in real life.
Oh, no, he's a lot like me.
Oh, is he really? Okay.
Yeah, and that's why it was a lot of fun, because normally you have to try and find something else, and I found a lot of me in this character. Even, like, over the last few days before opening, I was finding new things. It's like, oh, I want to change how I'm saying this, because I think we can get a better laugh, or it'll set up the next person so they can get a laugh. Especially in a small cast, like Travis was saying, it's especially important to support your fellow actors.
Was it real alcohol?
It was only a little bit of... No, it was iced tea.
Okay. You did very well making us think it was real.
No, I tend not to drink. I act silly enough without, so...
Okay, well, thank you very much for talking to me. Do you want to come on over?
You're all
set. Do you need the program?
Yeah, do you need the program?
No, I know my name. My name is Samantha Fork, and I play Veronica Novak.
As the show progressed, you could just see the tension growing as the show went on.
She completely loses it. She completely loses grasp of everything that she holds dear, I think.
And your character is completely opposite from the character of your husband. You're very liberal. He's very conservative.
It's funny because when I was trying to learn the character, at first I thought that she was completely different from myself. And as I looked into what she was saying and the ideals that she was putting out there, I realized I'm actually very much like the character in a way that when I lose it, I do. I lose it completely, and it's very hard to get it back. So the social niceties that are going on at the beginning, she's trying to make everybody happy. Once she drops all those, the gloves are off and she's ready to fight. Yeah.
I noticed that the two boys were never seen in the show. How did you picture in your mind what your son, who he was?
Well, I'm so fond of children myself.
Maybe not.
You're the only one of us without kids.
I'm the only one in the cast without an actual child. So I actually pictured my nephew, Simon. It was a little bit easier to be able to picture somebody I knew. And I can definitely see him leading a gang and probably causing some havoc on the playground. So,
tell me your name and the character you play.
My name is Jessica Weishman, and I play Annette Raleigh.
You have to have the scene stealer there when you vomited all over the place.
Thank you.
When I talked to the director, he wasn't going to tell me how you did that. Are you going to tell me how
Absolutely
that actually
Absolutely not,
worked?
No.
It's iced tea.
We've been sworn to secrecy.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm a method actor, so I go to Taco Bell before the show.
That's true.
I've been taking a lot of over-the-counter drugs to keep my nose from running. It all just kind of gets mixed up. It's nice cocktail.
Okay. And you had a very big meltdown in the show, too.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Ask them. They'll tell you.
Apparently, I have a meltdown. Yes.
Your son, how did you picture him in your mind?
My son is an innocent angel. My son, is a brilliant actor. He does the after-school drama program. He's a little eccentric, but he has a lot of friends. And you know what? He's really talented, and he was in this play last year. He had to dress up like a woman, which he was a little nervous about, and the boys at school were making a lot of fun of him, and all he wanted to do was, you know, be friends with them, but Henry would not let him in their gang. So honestly, I really think that this whole thing would have never happened if their son hadn't been a little ass in the first place, calling my child names and not allowing him to be a part of his gang.
And we don't know at the end of the show if this whole thing ever got resolved. Did it ever get resolved?
What do you think?
I think no, I don't think so.
You don't think there's any hope for the four of them?
Hope.
They're all just no hope.
No
hope.
The final performances of Axiom Repertory Theater's production, God of Carnage, are this weekend, tonight at 7:30, tomorrow at 7:30, and Sunday at 2:00. at Reading's Old City Hall. Let's join Weekend Showcase's visual art expert Dolores as she talks with the two curators at Chico State who are overseeing the print competition and exhibition, which is up through Tuesday, February 28th.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and today I'm speaking with two curators, Kelly Lindner from the Jackie Headley University Art Gallery and Catherine Sullivan, curator of the Janet Turner Print Museum. They are collaborating on the show called Currency. Catherine, can you give us a rundown on the history of this competition?
It began in 1995, shortly after I first became curator, and I felt we needed to have something that not only gave the collection bigger presence in the world of printmaking, but also as a way to bring into our environment that which was the most current in printmaking so that we could see that it was still a vital force.
Catherine, can you give us some orientation about the difference between artisan printmaking and reproductive printmaking?
When we started this process, it's really based on what Janet started in her collecting, the kinds of prints we specialize in called artisan prints, in that the artist has a great deal to do with the actual making of the print. Most of what the collection revolves around sort of the four traditional processes of printmaking: relief printing, intaglio, screen printing, or lithography.
This is very much a part of the course enrichment in the art department.
Well, we do have obviously a very thriving printmaking area started by Janet herself back in 1959 that continues today, in which the students are learning from their basis of the traditional printmaking how to express themselves with a current artistic voice. And so this also gives them an opportunity to see what printmakers that have been doing prints for a long time, how they're approaching it. So it's actually an adjunct to their course curriculum in that manner.
The theme this year for the exhibition is currency, but that could be interpreted in a number of different ways, and in fact was.
Well, we started about three competitions ago assigning a kind of banner or theme to the overall competition, thinking that that might spark artists in the way that they look at their own work. With a title like Currency, it's relevant in that we know that printed money is currency, and it is in a way printmaking. Also, currency is in electricity. Currency is what is commonly referred to as new and innovative. In the word itself, if you look it up in the dictionary, it's going to have more than one meaning. And we thought some layer of that might be something that sparks and distinguishes one competition from another in that it has a kind of overarching theme.
Did any of your artists interpret currency as electrical?
Well, there actually is one piece, it's Burn Pile by Bachrin Lomeli, which does have scrolling words on LED readout boards. That one has to be plugged in every day to actually be fully effective.
You were talking about a division between the University Art Gallery and the Janet Turner Print Museum that affected your selection process.
They kind of lend themselves to spaces that can interpret a collection of work a little bit differently. The University Art Gallery has always been on the forefront of looking at the most traditional things. That space lends itself to the more conceptual and different in terms of not only how they're produced, but what they're saying. And the Turner, with our background and our core mission in showing the history of printmaking, does lend itself to showing those things that will take you from things that are traditionally produced into those works that are moving past the boundaries of just being a common use of a particularly traditional technique.
Kelly, how about some of those edgier exhibitors this year?
The Jackie Headley University Art Gallery has several more installation-based pieces, which are very attractive as well as inspiring. One that's particularly coming to mind is the piece by Patrick Vincent, which is installed on a full wall at the back end of the gallery and incorporates different types of beehives and bees and skulls. They are all magnetized to the wall and they take up the entire expanse of the wall. And it really draws you to the back of the room. It implies a lot of movement. It's also talking about life and how we sustain it. A second piece that comes to mind is Mizen Shin's piece, which is called Virtual City, comprised of 1,000 little boxes that we had to assemble and arrange into a city, which is on the floor. When you look from above, it forms a QR code. A QR code can take you to a specific website and will show you a video. The video shows the assembly of the piece. It's talking about how our cities start with almost nothing, and then all of a sudden they're there. And I like that she's also talking about the virtual world, which is such an important part of what contemporary art is addressing now. It's also talking about how we engage in all these different planes now. It's not only our reality, but also what's happening virtually.
Both of those pieces could equally be in shows devoted to sculpture or environmental art. Do you find in them a kind of a tendency to break down the barriers between what had been well-defined disciplines of art making?
Yes. And I think overall, contemporary art has really broken down all of those sort of defining this is one thing or another. Artists are working across media all the time, taking advantage of different types of tools to address the issues that they really want to get across in their artworks. So printmaking has become a tool for many artists. There are still artists out there that define themselves solely as printmakers, but there are artists who are painters, who are sculptors, that are making use of these tools in interesting ways to really expand on what their art can be.
How about that piece composed of rubber bands and concrete?
I think that's an interesting example. It really pushes the boundaries of what a print can be. This is a piece by Eric Johnson that consists of a cast concrete weight, which is suspended from the corner of a room by a number of rubber bands. The piece is suspended about 6 feet off the floor, so there's an element of danger that is implied as you approach it. But where the artist sort of plays with the idea of the print, he calls the piece a monoprint, is that he inked the piece as he was casting it. He was incorporating a very traditional type of process into what is actually creating a sculpture.
Catherine, you were talking about a goal that in fact has been achieved by each one of these competitions, that is to bring new voices into the collection.
The part of the award system is twofold, one of which is that the collection is one that honors the past but looks towards the future. So it allows us within the budget that we have to select some pieces that really will be different in terms of the composition and makeup and add that new voice to the existing collection. So a couple things will remain. We also have the top exhibition award, the opportunity for an artist that is chosen to have a solo exhibition of their work next year. So they have a whole year to take their ideas and add to them and refine them. And it gives them a chance to have that whole specialized aspect of really furthering their voice.
Well, that's a great boon to any artist to have a goal to produce a body of work for really a very prestigious space.
Well, we hope that they feel complimented that they've been chosen to do it. And since most of our exhibition calendar is really based on being thematic, we don't really ever focus directly in our regular programming on a particular artist because the mission is to use the entire collection. And that means that we don't really have that degree of focus on a regular basis. So this is an opportunity to really show a more specialized and distinct voice in the art world. And hopefully it's someone that really does, as Kelly says, start to bridge that gap of moving out of just solely being one technique by either the way they do it or the way they're thinking about doing things.
Well, thank you both for giving us insights into a very intriguing show. Kelly, give us a rundown on how people can find you.
Both of our galleries are located in the new Arts and Humanities building on the Chico State campus, and that's at 1st and Salem Street near the roundabout. We have a shared lobby. The exhibition is spread out between both galleries.
Thank you.
here's music from the movie that brought back the movie musical in a major way. It's a film that's poised to win lots of Oscars this Sunday night. La La Land. And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program at its regular broadcast time, you can hear it online at mynspr.org. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in the North State. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio. We'll be right back.